The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to this week's episode of MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. I am your host, Bob Hayes, and today is Friday, the 12th of May, 2006. This is show number 58. Now, we're doing something a little different for this week's Chinese Grand Prix preview show. Liam Schubert, Jim Race, and I all did a conference call together on Skype, where we talked about a lot of different stuff, including the race in Shanghai this weekend. And we had a good time doing it, and I think it turned out pretty well. The quality, sometimes on Skype, like I say, when you get a lot of people in there, sometimes the quality goes up and down a little bit. You get kind of a twangy, flangy noise, but overall, I think this one came out pretty good. So let me know what you guys think and if you enjoy it. And without any further ado, why don't we get started? All right, I got Jim Race from RideOn2.com and Liam Schubert from Spain on Skype together. So audio quality is a little shaky. We're getting some flanging going on, but I think it's going to work out pretty good. And we're going to kind of do a little Shanghai preview, talk about some events that have happened in the motorcycle racing world this past week or so, and just kind of have a little chit chat. We'll see how it turns out. So hi guys, how you doing?
Hey Bob.
Hi Bob. Hi Jim.
Hey, how you doing, Liam? We've secretly been chatting for the last half hour or so just to make sure that we sound relatively exceptional, which is difficult for us, but this is our first three-way together, and we're continents away, so I guess we'll have to do what we can.
You had to go there. We could have all just been happy voices in cyberspace, but now it's a three-way.
Yeah, well, and with the listeners, who knows how far it's going to go, just please make sure you wear your rain suit.
No kidding.
Sorry.
Oh, man. Speaking of rain, what's up with China?
Well, we know what happened last year. Out of nowhere, well, not out of nowhere, but out of relative obscurity came my good friend and everybody's good friend, our buddy Olivier Jacques. That rocked last year. But having checked the weather today, what do we see? Friday, 100% chance of rain. Wow. Saturday, 90% chance of rain. Now, who knows what the Doppler is doing in China, but when I see something like that, I start to get cold.
Yeah. Ooh. I was wondering it in about the raining. Now, last year they did have the dry qualifying, but yeah, Jacques pretty much came back from out of nowhere. In fact, they had to make a pit board marker for him. I remember last year that for Rossi, they had a handwritten OJ. He's like, who the hell's that?
That's right. He didn't even have a marked suit. He was riding in a white suit. Because it was so last minute when they called him up to ride as a replacement for Alex Hoffman. So no time for even a Kawasaki leathers.
I think that might have been a rain jacket on the suit, wasn't it? Or was it actually the leathers?
I'm pretty sure the leathers were actually white. And
wow. Yeah, the rain suits, the rain cover is usually clear. Or yeah. Murky clear, I don't know. Also, I caught Oliver Jacques signing autographs when it was Kawasaki's turn to sign autographs for the people, and he was signing Alex Hoffman and Shinya Nakano posters.
Oh, jeez, that's gotta hurt.
The Chinese people didn't know the difference, but
yeah,
but what a showing he did.
You know, I look back on that race, and for me, that race. A lot of people don't like rain races. For me, that race last year was the one that actually really got me stoked about the possibility of the rookies or the hello, welcome back guys making a mark in GP. Maybe it didn't turn out that way last season, but this year is certainly looking to be something that's going to blow everybody away. And who knows what the rookies are going to do in the rain.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. And actually thinking about it, yeah, Liam, you were at that race last year, at that same race. That was one of your sort of trips.
And I wish I was there again this year, but I couldn't get my visa situation squared away, and that's a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. But, I wish I was there in Shanghai, says the guy who's going to go to, like, you know, 10 of the European rounds this year or something. Yeah, killing me, Liam.
Don't feel too sorry for him. He's paying his own way most of the rides, so.
Oh yeah, I know.
Yeah, this is true. And besides, it's taken me a full year just to recuperate from all the partying I did in Shanghai last year. So, Maybe next year. Maybe next year. We'll see.
Like, did you get to hang out backstage with all the stars last year, Liam, or what?
No. Last year I was a complete unknown. More unknown than I am now. In fact, my whole saga kind of started in Shanghai. In that I went to Shanghai just because I knew it was the first GP in China, and I had a close friend move to China, and it just seemed like the perfect opportunity. Hey, I'll go check out my old buddy, and I'll get to see my first GP race overseas. And just coincidentally, I ran into Seth Gibernau's crew partying on Sunday night after the race. So that's kind of how I first made friends in the GP world, and it's a lot of the reason why I'm here in Europe now.
Long, strange trip it's been, and
It's been a busy year.
Yeah. Do you still have, and I'm marking the time here, do you still have those DVDs that you did?
I do have a couple of those.
Maybe, you know, if we want to put in there, basically Liam made a DVD along with, what was it, what was your little, you know, the production company that you guys did? I'm sorry, Liam, but give us a plug
That's
for your
no
DVD,
problem.
Liam.
Okay. Basically, a couple of friends and I went to China to watch the Chinese GP, and then we also went to the Laguna Seca, the U.S. GP, and we made a video, a documentary of our experiences, and we got a chance to sit down with Alex Barros and interview him in English for quite some time. So we put together a nice little DVD under the production name of Team Supreme, and the DVD is called The Backstage of MotoGP, and it offers views and sights that the normal race fan won't ever get a chance to see because it's not on Eurosport or it's not through Dorna. But it's just a fun sampling of you know, what some crazy Americans can do when we go to the races.
Cool. And if somebody wanted to buy one of those, what, they give you an email at your Gmail address or what?
Sure. Email me at motoliam@gmail.com, and I'll see what I can do as far as getting a copy to somebody in the States.
And he's basically, Liam is just kind of covering costs on that, and this didn't mean for this to turn into a commercial out there, folks, but when he mentioned it, and I saw a copy, that's and actually how I met Liam, reading about that in the Road Racer Road Racer X or the Road Racer Head online column or somewhere, and I was like, man, I want one of those, and sort of emailed him. Next thing you know, I don't know. The story is born, and success has not spoiled Liam. Success hasn't spoiled Liam yet, despite his worldwide fame. He's still a super interesting guy to talk to. So enough plugging for your damn DVD, Liam. Let's talk about Shanghai.
Yeah, chop that stuff up. Let's talk about the racing.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a race this weekend?
Yeah. What? So round four of the exciting 2006 season. I'm looking
Will
forward to
it. Will we see a fourth pole position? And a fourth race winner that's different yet again.
Yes.
That burning questions, man. I mean, this race and this track and the flyaway, correct me if I'm wrong, but, and Liam, maybe you know this, and maybe I've read it somewhere, but they go, do they go the wrong way, the quote-unquote wrong way around to get to China, or are they flying across the continent?
I believe they're flying across the continents. And the only reason why I can figure this out is because of the emails that I've sent back and forth with people. I can kind of judge the time between when I know they left, when they emailed me and said they're leaving, and when I received a follow-up email, so I know that they're there.
Are you getting Road Racing World over there?
No, not at all. In fact, about the only magazines I can get are Cycle World, Motorcyclist, and Road Racer X, and they're all around $10 US, so I don't really frequently check out the U.S. magazines anymore.
And I imagine, frankly, for those of us that like instantaneous information about racing, that the online world is, in some circumstances, the only way to go, because nothing like getting spoiled a month later because we're simply not that patient.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the reason I asked that is because I think it was Road Racing World the other day that I read that China is actually the most difficult place for the teams to bring all of their team infrastructure into, not only from an import-export situation, but also in terms of costs. And nobody wants to cut costs, but one of the things that struck me from that article was the fact that these teams are, for the most part, and I think it was the Honda team they were highlighting, are using two crates. Now, you've seen these crates, and I think I've got a picture in my mind's eye, but most of them are about bike size and granted rectangular. You can fit, for example, in engines in one of those crates, perhaps 6 or 7.
I'd say with the size of these engines, if you were going to use the bike container to carry the motors, you could probably fit 8.
Okay.
But they have individual containers for the engines, and then they'll put those boxes into other boxes.
Sure. Malaysia, for that matter, was the country that it was apparently easiest to get in and out of, both from cost and from...
customs viewpoints.
Yep. I think it's the amount that you can grease, but people from Malaysia don't hound me about that. Anyway, China, incredible. Look forward to it, because last year, the first year, the real beginning of GP there was a washout, per se. What's going to happen this year if they get a dry day on Sunday?
I don't know. I definitely know from physically walking around the circuit that whole turn one and the following few corners after that are a real nightmare and a maze. If anybody's familiar with Sears Point, it's kind of like the carousel, but reversed and going uphill, and then there's some other corners after that, and it's a difficult bunch of corners to navigate on a high-powered bike. I think, though, with the traction control, it might make things a little easier, but definitely the setup as far as getting into that corner the right way and being able to maintain your lines is going to be critical to the finishing order.
I mean, the thought occurs to me that the Suzukis, who did well last year and had a horrible start to the beginning of this season, then had a great showing in Istanbul a couple of weeks ago. Should we get into a wet practice and wet qualifying, may end up well qualifying near the top of the grid or very close to it, and then we end up with a dry race again. And, I mean, there's so many different factors that are coming into this weekend that I don't know where to start. And, frankly, at the Ride on 2 tipping competition, I have absolutely no idea who to pick. And it's one of those things where you wait until the last minute to make your guess, and you hope it's educated, and then you have no idea what's going to happen in 8 hours when the weather clears up or not.
You know, ironically enough, we saw in Istanbul, we saw the Suzukis up front qualifying first. We saw John Hopkins up front. And last year at the Chinese GP, both John Hopkins and Kenny Roberts Jr. were up front leading that race. And who knows, maybe it's this year that they had to suffer for a year, and maybe Bridgestone will come through for them and have something that they'll be able to put to good use. I do know, I spoke with Juan Martinez, set the Gibernau's mechanic last weekend for some time when I was at the Albacete circuit, where coincidentally the MotoGP Academy, or the Red Bull MotoGP Academy, was running in the Spanish Nationals in 125. I was speaking with Juan, and he said, you know, when we were considering moving from Honda to Ducati, we knew we would get into the Bridgestones, and everybody knows that there are tracks that the Bridgestones are better at and some where the Michelins are better at. And, you know, as much as we want to fight and win at every race that we go to, we know that there are some tracks where we're just not as strong. And we know that Bridgestone's working hard to try and rectify that. And he told me that at the Istanbul race, you know, Bridgestone had great qualifying results. But when it came time to choose the tire for the race, it was a question of, okay, we've got our tried and true, and you guys know what this tire is like. And we have something else that you can try, which is kind of unknown. We don't know what it's going to be like for the race distance, but we believe it's going to be better. So a couple of people took the gamble on that tire, and that was Gibernau, and that was John Hopkins. And they went for it, and unfortunately it didn't quite last as long as they would have liked. But Bridgestone's definitely learned from that, and they've had a couple of weeks now before the Chinese race, so I think we'll see something different from Bridgestone. I'm hoping that they get the strong qualifying results that they've been getting, and I hope they have something that's race-worthy under the Suzuki and under the Ducatis.
Would you say that Shanghai is a Bridgestone track? I mean, we saw a dry qualifying last year, and Gibernau was on the pole, and if I recall correctly, Caparossi was right up there. So, you know, we had good results from Bridgestone. Is that, would you say it's a Bridgestone track?
I'm not really sure, because it doesn't really get hot enough to be considered one of the hot, slippery racetracks, you know, like Sepang or Motegi, especially because of this time of year. And if it's wet, I'm not really sure. I think it's pretty clearly even, I think, between the two right now. Michelin definitely has a little bit more experience in the tire business in MotoGP, but it could be a Bridgestone track. If they get the right tires to the Suzukis, then, you know, any power that they might not have on the straightaway, they'll definitely be able to make up in corner speed. And because there are some slower corners at this track, you know, that might be a valuable thing to have.
Yeah, that's true.
To be able to exploit the corner speed.
Do you think those two long straightaways, though, because there's two fairly long straights.
Yeah, it's got the longest straight in the series at this point. And I don't know what they're saying about the Kawasaki and the Suzuki, especially the Suzuki, is that they're not losing time on the straights anymore, that they finally got their motor up and running as far as the straightaway power. And hopefully we're going to see a close race that people will be able to tow one another. And, you know, it'll lead to an exciting finish, though.
Right.
Personally, I don't know how anything could be more exciting than the Istanbul 250 and GP race.
I agree.
those two finishes were just, I'm still thinking about those.
Yeah.
Still glowing.
Yeah, they were awesome.
One thing that comes to mind when we're talking about tire manufacturers is having tracks. It seems to me, and perhaps I'm misguided, that the technology is changing quick enough, and more specifically, the chassis requirements and power output from the GP bikes, you can't guess or you can't have a real solid idea prior to the race what track is going to be or what manufacturer is going to be dominant one track. There's no equation that can take last year's results and pound them onto what's going to happen this year, especially with the crop of riders that we've got out there today.
Oh, I agree. It's definitely, everything's up in the air right now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm baffled. I have no idea how this season's going to end up. I have thoughts and ideas from long-term past performance, but as everybody knows, anything can happen in motorcycle racing, and anybody's attitude can change. People can get on fire and do some amazing things. I don't know how to go this year. If I had to predict who was going to win this season, I would probably pick Cardoso just so I would lose. I'm sorry. That's a horrible thing to say.
What a dig. Poor guy.
I would not have any idea how to pick. If you asked me to pick the top five, which I've done historically for almost for 18 years now, I could not tell you who I thought was going to be there at the end.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Another thing about China, now that I think about it, Rossi rode his scooter on the track. He often rides the scooter along the circuits to get an idea for the track, especially last year when it was a new circuit to all the riders. And he had funny things to say. He said the first corner was really funny, and then when he was riding on his scooter, he said he almost ran out of track while he was riding the track on his scooter going through turn one. So I think that kind of tells you that they definitely don't like turn one.
Was that his out lap on his scooter?
No, that was the hot lap.
Okay.
The first lap. I think he went flying down the straightaway and just didn't expect such a tight, short turn as that first corner. It's just, it really is an F1 track. And it's time to see what the bikes can do on that track.
It's kind of interesting for such a Formula One, Herman Tilke, modern design track to have a long straightaway like that with such a tight corner at the end. And, I mean, they don't run a chicane in the Formula One races or anything, do they? I mean, it just straightaway and bam, this tight decreasing radius corner, right?
Right.
And, I mean, I know in MotoGP there's no chicane, but...
Yeah, I don't believe they're running. Though I must confess, I'm not really strong when it comes to anything F1. I seem to recall that they've got four wheels, and that rules is out of my interest.
Yeah. I think the wheels are exposed, too. But you were actually there.
Bizarre.
I was wondering if you... you know,
that sounds dangerous.
Yeah, I know. It's horrible. But down there at the end of the straight, if maybe you noticed that there was an alternate configuration for the layout, although another thing...
No, there's not an alternate configuration. Okay. It's a straightaway, and then bam, on the brakes and bend it over to the right.
Yeah, that seems a little old school compared to the modern, you know, because this track is a Formula One track, and that's one of the things that, for me, I do remember last year's race was such a stunner, but it was more because of the whole just, oh my God, factor that we had going on with such a wet race and Olivier Jacques and all of that. But as far as the track itself is concerned, you know, it's a big, another giant Herman Tilke track that's not Istanbul. and it
oh, come on, if it's not Laguna Seca, it doesn't matter.
No, or Donington, or you know, Mugello. But no, I just these, you know, these modern ones, they leave me a little cold. But you know, the guys do good racing no matter what. One thing I do remember about this track is it's supposed to be reminiscent of some Chinese character or something that I'm not sure what it means. Do you remember that?
It's designed after the character for the term Shang in Shanghai.
Okay.
Which means high or above. So basically it took the character, kind of stretched it out and played with it on LSD and came up with this track. You know, I got to admit, actually having been there and looking at the first couple of corners, the way they've got it set up on a hill and the way they've got the grandstands around it, it looks like a killer place to have a golf course, like a chipping range.
Oh, my God. How old are you, Liam?
Oh, well, I'm just saying that it just seems really weird to have the hills and the curves in those first couple corners. It's
you're talking about replacing racetracks with golf courses. I think you're in Spain, right? How often do flights come over?
Yeah, that's I was a little shocked there, Liam. I was kind of speechless, in fact.
It just seems like a great place to have a chipping range. I don't know. It's a strange track.
Well, it, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they have lots of water traps on the team.
Yes, they've actually, where they've got the paddocks set up, it's gorgeous. Unlike any other paddock setup that I've seen or heard about, it's like they've got these little moats and rivers going everywhere. And you've got to cross over these concrete walkways over all these streams and rivers, and they've got fish swimming in them. It's a really cool setup.
This is in the paddock?
Oh yeah, no.
The backside,
the team. Okay, so last year, Bob and listeners out there, if you haven't seen it, and you happen to be a paid up member of MotoGP.com, there was a really cool walkthrough of the whole Suzuki headquarters last year.
Oh, I remember that.
Ten minutes long. They went through. They showed all the inside and outside of the what's the word I'm looking for? It's a house on stilts over water. I'm sure it's much more abbreviated, but I'm sure we'll get some listener email on that. I have a question for you guys, or I have a challenge for you, because we're not running too long, but I will put this up to you guys. Name, and pick who you want, name the top three riders, and I get to go last. This is evil. I get to go last. The top three riders that you expect to be on the box in both wet and dry for this race this weekend.
Oh, dude.
Oh, man, you're asking me to expose my ride on two tipping contest results?
I know I won't be exposing my ride on two tipping. I think I have 1 point or some crap. I mean, it's awful.
Okay. Actually, I think you're pretty far down there too, Liam, so go for it.
I was working at the Istanbul race and I couldn't put my entry in.
Oh, yeah, right. That was it.
Yeah, completely. Look, there's no entry. All right. So to get back to this, wet or dry, who do I think is going to be on the box?
Let's start with wet.
Okay, wet, top three guys. Well, I'd love to say Gibernau, but, you know, I can't. I just can't.
You're not getting a ride to Le Mans, dude.
We'll get into that later. No, I think definitely Nicky Hayden had a lot of chance to play in the wet in preseason testing, and he seems to have a good handle on the bike as far as he's ridden it so much and so many laps that he knows how far he can go without crashing now. You know, we haven't seen him lose the front. He's been on the box 7 races in a row, so he definitely knows he's found the limits to the bike. All right, this is true of the wet and the dry. So I'm confident Hayden will be up front.
You going to pick him for both wet and dry?
I think
so. The number one guy. Okay.
Well, I don't know if I'd say number one, but hey, one can hope. No, I think he's shown a lot of consistency, and he's gotten more mature at the racetracks. That's for sure. So I have hopes for Hayden to be up there. It's a toss-up. I really like the Fortuna guys this year. Specifically, I know Elias did his best result there last year, Tony Elias, and I know he really likes that track. So it, maybe it's time for yet another. I still consider him to be a rookie because it's his first year with Honda, even though he was with Yamaha last year. He's still doing it. I consider him a rookie. Though as one Yamaha official pointed out to me, hey, you're either a virgin or you're not. So I guess Elias is not a virgin. But regardless, back to that. I think Elias shows promise, and I think Melandri's confidence is back up to speed. So one of the Fortuna guys could be up there in the wet or the dry. But one thing I've noticed is that the smaller guys don't seem to be doing so well in the rain. And different theories for this. I remember reading somewhere, somebody posted on one website or one forum that maybe the little guys don't weigh enough to really push the tires down into the track when it's raining. And I just didn't want to say that the tires were slicks and there's no treads or, you know, something along those lines. But it seems like the little guys aren't really liking the rain. So I don't really expect to see any rookies on the box if it's a wet race.
That's an interesting thing about the lightness, and bypassing the idea of wedgies completely, which was a very cool idea that was introduced at the last race, or at least the first time I saw it. The fact of lightness and people being able to get, well, first off, what happens in the rain? You have to muscle a bike a lot more. Even though the intent is to ride smooth, you have to recover from a lot of very small mistakes people don't see on TV. And that right. is what takes the human horsepower, if you will, to recover from those mistakes and continue on and to keep the psyche on the same level you need to be competitive throughout an entire rain race. Rain race or not, you take – how many little guys we got? Okay, Caparossi, he's a little guy. Well, he's chunky, but he's a little guy. Who's the little guy we're talking about?
We've got Stoner. Well, Stoner's not that little, but Pedrosa and yep. Elias are definitely little guys.
Yep. All right, so on the box you've got – so let's say – you've got all Hondas so far, correct me if I'm wrong.
And then naturally the third spot or first spot, whichever you want to say, because I haven't admitted to what order I was disclosing everything, but you can never count the doctor out, and he's proven that time and time again. So to bet against him is just pure folly.
And that's a good point, and especially since we go back to the fact that Yamaha has had chassis issues this year. Finally admitted, and people are talking about it, et cetera, et cetera. But when those chassis issues are exacerbated by what I understand is a lack of, or not a lack, a fact of too much grip in a chassis that perhaps may be too stiff. In the rain, what do you do with the chassis? You soften everything up, turn the thing into a marshmallow. If you can do that through the suspension, and the chassis will comfortably remain relaxed. You've got Rossi at the helm. I think he's got a great shot.
You know, it's also interesting to remember the ERTA tests that they were doing earlier this year, because the one where they were competing for the car, we saw Colin Edwards coming first for that, and then Nicky Hayden was right behind him. Valentino was posting impressive lap times before his crash, and so was Kenny Roberts Jr. So it's not outside the realm of possibility to see Colin Edwards and Kenny Roberts Jr. up there if it does rain.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, I was going to get my picks in here real quick on the wet, if we can, or if I'm not interrupting.
You've been doing research while we've been chit-chatting.
That is not true.
Go for it, Bob.
I've
go
been
for
listening
it.
With rapt attention. I'm going to go in the wet. I'm going to go with Melandri and Rossi, and then here's the surprise for a wet pick, and I'm on the fence, either Kenny Roberts Jr. or a Suzuki. So I'll go with that for the wet. Whoa. But I can't sit on the fence, so I'm gonna go out on the limb, Kenny Roberts Jr. in the wet.
Okay.
We're talking deluge proportions like it was last year.
Like Donington.
Donington. Okay. Yeah.
Now to completely boggle yourself, who in the dry, Bob?
I'm sorry, in the dry?
Go ahead.
Pedrosa, Rossi, and Hayden.
Wow.
Whoa.
Kind of going with the safe route there, you guys. I mean, Repsol Hondas and Rossi.
Traditionally speaking, those are what run up front.
Yeah, and I got to agree with you, Liam. You can never count out Rossi, and I mean that's probably been my downfall this year so far. Is it's like, well, okay, this little run of bad luck's going to stop. Rossi's going to win, you know, and it's sort of wow. But I do think though that Hayden is on a roll. He's had 7 podiums in a row now, and
yes,
I think he's feeling it. He's finally got a second place. So it's not just a third place podium, but you know, now he's okay. And he needs to be on top of the box. And I think that he's, there's a fire that's lighting up and he's never going to be a win at all costs guy. But I think that he might be, he might have more of the, I don't know, killer instinct, if you want to call it that, where it's like, if I have to just stuff it under this guy, then I'm gonna, that might be showing up a little bit.
There's part of me that says that, or at least in my mind, interpreting his mind, which is probably a bad idea, but that he probably feels that he needs to win another race prior to the GP, because if he doesn't and he comes back and wins the GP, people are going to say what they said all last year, which is he can only win the GP, and the only reason he's doing it is because he knows the track.
I think that that's a very, very fair assessment, and he has to legitimize himself because he does have the talent. He's just maybe it's he's at a difficult time in MotoGP history, which everybody except Rossi is, and then also this year you have the the crop of rookies. I mean, these guys are surprising the hell out of me. I mean, we knew we'd see good stuff from Pedrosa and we knew Stoner was a good rider, but still. And then Vermeulen and on the Suzuki is surprising me.
Yeah, I just want to point out that Vermeulen is really good at sliding the front.
Yeah.
The guy has a unique touch and a peculiar style. You can't really tell from his body positioning, but some of the video clips I've watched, he does amazing things with a bike. So Vermeulen's definitely a dark horse in this race, depending on the weather conditions and depending on whether the Suzuki stays together and the tires stay together. So
that's exactly what I was thinking when I was hedging about having, and I hesitate to say Vermeulen over Hopper or whatever, but a Suzuki, I mean, the power delivery in the rain is going to be a factor. And, if there is rain, I mean, it's the great equalizer. And I think that, that it will help a lot. That's why I'm going with Kenny Roberts, too.
As far as being a great equalizer, we're seeing customer bikes up front, which is another really cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
It gives hope for the privateer, but only for this year. I mean, it's easy to give away bikes when you know they're not going to be needed next year. And I say give away with tongue-in-cheek because nobody gives away anything, and specifically Honda is going to be reaping some profit in order to put it back in R&D for next year's bike. One of the things, if we get a chance, I think we should have a show later on the 800cc stuff, but that's neither here nor there right now.
Right.
Okay. My picks for the dry? Let's see. I might have to agree with you, Bob. Those look like a really solid bunch of things. So if I said Repsol Hondas and Rossi, that would be my answer, but that wouldn't be where my heart as a fan would be. I really love seeing more manufacturers and more people mixing it up at the front of the race. So I'm hoping that I would see a Ducati, and shit, I mean, if a Kawasaki could get on the top of the box, does anybody... I wasn't even born the last time that happened.
Do you think...
Thanks a lot, Liam.
Oh, can you remember the last time a Kawasaki was on the top of the box?
In GP?
In Grand Prix?
I didn't see it live, but I do remember, and it was a really long time ago, and I believe I had just turned old enough to drink beer.
No, I'm not talking about Corky Ballantyne, because he didn't win the race. He just got on the box.
Well, true. No, I cannot go back that far. My limited amount of brain cells are entirely dedicated to GP racing.
I'm just teasing Kawasaki and Kawasaki fans out there. I really do have a soft spot for the green bikes.
Everybody likes the underdog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why I'm a little curious why we didn't pick them for the wet there, Liam. What were your wet picks again?
Well, I went with Nicky Hayden, mm-hmm. one of the Fortuna guys, and Rossi.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, who knows? We'll see. I guess we're going to have to wait till Sunday, which for some reason in the USA, they're waiting until real late in the day for 3 p.m. on Pacific time to broadcast the race on Speed. Wow. So I'll probably
Speaking
end up watching
of which,
MotoGP.
Rumble. They showed World Superbike, at least on the West Coast, at 7 o'clock this last weekend.
Yeah.
In the morning?
No,
in the evening.
Oh, wow.
10 o'clock Eastern. You figure 10 p.m. at night, and they finally get around to showing. I didn't look at their schedule to see what was more important during the day, but I know that this Sunday they have the 250s, and this is Pacific time, they have the 250s at 9 a.m. Okay, so, you know, they've been kind of moving them earlier in the day because of Supercross. That's fine. I'll deal with it. I don't mind. In fact, it's better for me. So they have the 250s at 9 a.m., and then 6 hours of, like, Rolex sports car series. And then 3 p.m. we have MotoGP, and I'm like, you know, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, what's this six-hour gap? So.
I just want to state for the record that I hate being an armchair race fan as far as making picks. I'm just more excited about the race in general, the whole.
Why do you think I put you on this spot?
Oh, I hate that. I hate that.
You're never going to talk
to
me again, are you?
I'm just happy whenever there's a race.
Yes.
You know, the weekends when there's not a race, I look around and I go, shouldn't I be doing something? Like, what? Isn't there somewhere I need to ride to or something I need to do? Just love when the race is on, and that's all I care about.
Yes. There's also that anticipation, though, for the following race. You know, it's like buying a lottery ticket. You know, you're not going to win, but you have a couple of days of fantasizing what you're going to do with it. You know, and so with the races, you have a couple of weeks of, oh, boy, I can't wait to see who's going to win in Shanghai, that kind of thing. That's always fun for me. And then you watch it.
I never considered that.
Hmm?
I never considered that.
Yeah.
For me, every race is like Christmas, and especially this year, because this year I have no idea what presents I'm going
to
get.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it. All right, enough sappy every race is like Christmas commentary. I do
actually,
have one.
Actually, that gives... That gives me a good idea, Bob.
What's that?
I think that because of all the great listeners that listen and appreciate this show, I think everybody should come up with their definition of what the race is like for them and email it to you.
Oh, crap. I thought you were going to get them all to send us Christmas presents.
Let's do both. No, that's a good idea. I mean, you know, we could have a little email, you know, what is it, and we'll read them off and stuff like that.
I'd love to know what people think about the races and how people view the races, because, you know, everybody's got a different attitude and opinion towards it. And as much as we all love it, and that's what bonds us as motorcycling people, I think it might make for some interesting answers. So,
yeah,
people get out your computers and write. Bob loves getting that stuff.
Good call.
I do like getting emailed.
You have plenty of time right now, too, Bob. I'm just hanging out.
I'm just deluged with time. As you can tell, folks out there, it's been a rough month and a half here of stuff, and it's not going to get any better in the next month or so. I'm very, very busy, but you know, we're still trying to put on a good show. Getting a lot of help from some really great people, including Liam and Jim, and you know, that's all really cool, and been exchanging email with fans and a lot of good wishes and stuff like that. That's really, really cool.
This might be a good time for me to suggest that I've been hearing some things about changing the calendar for next year concerning the race series. And when I say changing the calendar, I don't mean changing the dates. I mean changing the venues. I can't really remember who told me this, but I remember hearing that China has a 5-year contract, I believe, with Dorna. But I know that there are some older races in Europe that are potentially on the block to be cut after this year so that they can add other races in other places. So I've heard that they'll be adding a race in Italy, and then possibly as far away as another one in the middle of Asia and another one near Australia. So if you guys can put that together and figure out what I'm talking about, I'll be able to give you more information about it as I find out more in the coming weeks.
Hmm.
But I will say this, if you're on the fence about visiting Estoril in Portugal, this would be a good year to go.
So suddenly I can see all these folks in Portugal going, oh, hell.
Yes, exactly. What is this?
Yeah, it's kind of along the same lines of the guy that said, oh, I had a really horrible flight. I don't want to give away the company that I flew on, but let's just say it was an American airline.
I have something I want to bring up, and another complete change of subject while we're at it. And we just had our first race in Istanbul with no tobacco advertising. And I have seen photos of this from the Malaysian tests, but did you notice that the Camel bikes, instead of having the rider's name, they simply said team. Now, always before, they would substitute the rider's name for the Camel logo. And
not always.
Yes.
Not always.
No. Oh, not always in the Camels?
No, I've seen team before.
I've seen team on the guy's shirts, but I don't recall ever seeing it on the bikes. But in any case, last year they certainly, by and large, they did. You would see, the rider's name would be on there rather than team, or just a big blank spot like we see on the Ducatis or whatever. And I'm just wondering if that's a Rossiism because, there is no I in team sort of an attitude, which is cool. It's fine. If there is a me, however, but, if that's, if, what do you think on that? What do you guys think about that one? Or am I just, put down the crack pipe, Bob, and stop worrying about what's written on the motorcycles?
My idea about it is that they have multiple sets of bodywork. They have one set of essentially generic bodywork that will pass the tobacco legislation, whatever country they run in. And then they have bodywork that is for those countries that will allow tobacco advertising. I'm looking at a picture right now, and I'm surprised it didn't break up our conversation because I shouldn't be downloading 3 main pictures while I'm talking to you guys. But of the 800cc Ducati and its bodywork, and it's basically just got an Alice up in the corner. And I'll let you guys chit-chat while I try and find something more appropriate and that might talk about what you're talking about. But that's my thought.
Well, okay. I'm misunderstanding what you're saying here, Jim. I'm not arguing that we obviously have no tobacco logos on non-tobacco races. It's just I'm saying rather than running the rider name, they ran team.
Very interesting.
And my hunch is that it's a Rossiism that, he doesn't want his name splattered in what, probably 6-inch high letters across the side of the motorcycle.
Yeah, I don't know.
Biaggi had no such problem with that and Barros.
Yeah, this goes far back. Yeah, as far back. I remember seeing Ukawa's bike saying Ukawa.
Yep.
On the side.
Yeah, the last several years in a row, everybody who's rode for, when it was, Camel Honda, they always had that.
If you have a choice between, let's say, for two bikes, and let's assume, although this may not be correct, that for Ducati or whoever, the bodywork, and this is probably a bad assumption on my part, but the bodywork is good across, say, the M1 or the RCV or the GP6. Let's say that you can transfer a piece of bodywork from one bike to another. Odds are that since they only have what percentage of countries and races that we run this year do not support tobacco advertising? If it's 10%, they might have to switch them back and forth between the bikes. But your point is taken. Why aren't they personalized? I don't know.
One thing I just thought of, and I probably should have thought of this before, is that last year it was. Camel Honda, and it was Sito Ponza's team. This year it's Camel Yamaha, and so Yamaha's running the show. Maybe it's not so much a sponsor policy as a team policy. Because when West used to have, when it was West Honda Pons way back when, they had the rider names on there instead of West.
I don't know.
Whatever. I don't know. I just thought it was kind of interesting, and like I say, I got to jump to conclusions whenever you see anything about Rossi. You know, hey, got to jump to that conclusion. That means he's going to Formula One. So, well, you know.
Bottom line, what's interesting? I'll bring this up concerning tobacco sponsorship in Formula One. But it seemed to be a real quiet press release that Marlboro has re-upped with Ducati for 6 more years or 5 more years up through 2011.
Mm-hmm. The last tobacco big daddy.
That's right. And this is despite the increasing regulations against tobacco sponsorship in Europe. I think Spain is pretty much the only country right now where you can show tobacco sponsorship.
And even that might be changing
in the future.
That's a little bit of Spain just saying, hey, you know, we're going to do our own thing. It's just worth too much money for us. Flouting the EU.
Racing.
I'm sorry?
Spain loves its motorcycling.
Yeah.
So I think, speaking of the F1 speculation, that's quite a commitment from Marlboro to stick with Ducati after all the other tobacco manufacturers or sponsors are kind of stepping back year after year. The fact that they've signed such a long contract with Ducati makes you wonder what their plans are for F1 since they have such a good relationship with a certain, what were they, four-wheelers?
Four-wheelers? Yes, from another Italian red brand, yeah.
Just food for thought, food for thought.
Good food for thought.
Four-wheeled food for thought. Anyway.
Okay, well, I guess that's it for me. If you guys want to stay on the line.
I'm sorry?
I think I'm good. I appreciate everybody listening, and we crammed this call together in the space of about 15 minutes. So thanks, guys, for helping get it orchestrated quick style.
Right. And
thanks for having me, you guys. I really appreciate it. I really get a kick out of how many people say, oh, I heard this on MotoG Pod, or I just wanted to find out more, and people email me. So
where was that, Liam? MotoG Pod? No, MotoG Pod.
Why do you keep saying that? It's not spelled like that.
That's how they spell it in Qatar.
Yeah, there you go. Actually, you know what time, folks, it is? And this is why Liam said MotoG Pod. It's like 6 a.m. in the morning for Liam, and it's not that he just got up early. He's working on the Spanish hours and hasn't gone to bed yet. So it's probably pretty
true.
Tired.
That's true. It's MotoGPOD.
Thank you.
Because you want to OD on MotoGP.
There you go.
Oh, my God. That's your new slogan. Get your fix. OD at MotoGPOD.
Okay, see that pillow over there, Liam? It's calling you.
Well, alrighty, guys. I agree that it is time to wrap things up before the silly factor really takes going on. We've got the Shanghai race this Sunday. We will have a race wrap-up probably on Tuesday, if we're lucky. I have my track day on Monday, by the way, guys. So, I know. I can't wait. Which is, going to put a cramp in the podcasting situation a little bit, but hey, and I might record a little bit for, say, the motorcycle podcast group or something. I'm not sure if I'll put a big long spiel in MotoGPOD, because who wants to hear about some amateur guy going out for his first track day? But, you know, if I do anything for the motorcycle podcast group, I will mention it, and that'll be fun. And until then, thank you very much. Goodbye, Liam. Goodbye, Jim.
One quick question for you,
Bob. Quick question.
Why don't you tell the listeners what tires you'll be using at the track day?
I'll be using Dunlop qualifiers, Liam.
Oh, man. Qualifiers only last for one lap.
You didn't, like, score some Pirelli?
Oh, you mean the new qualifiers.
The new qualifiers, the D209, right?
okay.
No, I've been a Dunlop fan, and, you know, for regular Joe Blow motorcyclist, trying a new set of tires is an expensive and somewhat... Not scary in a scary sense, although it can be scary, I guess. But, you know, just, hey, I'm going to risk $200+ on a set of tires that I might hate. So, you know, I've always liked Dunlops, and I kind of stick with them for that reason.
I guess I know what you're made out of now.
But
I'm just teasing. I love Dunlop, but I typically don't run them on my personal vehicles.
No. What do you run typically on your personal vehicles?
I like Avon tires, and the last couple of years I fell in love with the Pirelli Scorpion Sync tires because I don't really go on smooth pavement quite a bit. I try and seek the road less taken, and the Scorpion Sync AT is a tire that comes standard on vehicles like the Multistrada or the Buell City Cross. it's a good, durable, soft tire that really seems to eat up potholes and pavement deformities and lets you do hooligan things and jump curbs and grass. And it's a dopey tire. I love it.
Interesting. And what do you run, Jim?
Yeah. I'm kind of limited in what I run. I'm one of those guys that eschewed the street many years ago. Seven years ago. Yeah, because it was too dangerous, and so I only do my riding on the track. And okay. Frankly, for the wheels on the bike that I run, I'm kind of limited. I actually race with a sport touring tire, and it would start with a D.
Okay.
Okay. You know, I'm actually quite a fan of the sport touring tire because I think that a lot of times it's more predictable than what you get on a full-on race tire.
Well, if I had my druthers, I'd be running slicks, but I can't in a production class. And likewise, for a 16-inch wheel, there is not a whole lot out there. So,
yeah, this is true. This is true.
Anyway, so wrap it up, Bob.
All righty. So we will wrap it up this time. Thank you very much for joining us. Goodbye, Jim. Goodbye, Liam.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks, Liam.
Thanks, everybody. Take care and listen to MotoGPOD.
Alrighty.
That's MotoGP odd, right?
Yes. Something's odd. Alrighty, we are out. Alrighty, that went pretty well. We had a lot of fun doing that. I hope it was good to listen to as well. When you do get, like I said earlier, when you do get several people on Skype, you get quality issues. Overall, though, I didn't notice too much of that. If you did or if it bothered you a lot or whatever, let me know. Drop me an email. And also, we mentioned Liam Schubert's Team Extreme DVD that he published about his trip to Shanghai and then the U.S. Grand Prix last year at Laguna Seca. It's a good DVD. He interviews Alex Barros. He's got a lot of interesting stuff, kind of a behind-the-scenes paddock tour from a sort of a power fan viewpoint. It was a lot of fun. I liked it a lot. If you're interested in a copy of that, email Liam at motoliam@gmail.com. And of course, I'll put an email link on the website at motogbod.com, but it's motoliam@gmail.com. If you want to email me, I can be reached at bob@motogpod.com. And if you want to email Jim Race, he can be reached at race@motogpod.com. So thank you very much for downloading this show. We're going to have a Shanghai wrap up next week sometime, Tuesday or Wednesday. And until then, enjoy the races, and I'll talk to you later. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.